What happens when we start to veer? To wander? To allow our freedom to take us somewhere we didn't intend to go? Will we lose the road? Or is there a way to find it again?
Well, good morning. Hey, like Russell said earlier, we are so incredibly excited and want you to know just how privileged we feel that you have chosen to join us, whether it's here in person or listening on our podcast or checking us out online as we embark on this new series that we are calling Rumble Strip. And I cannot tell you how incredibly excited I am to dive into this new series, because over the next 4 weeks, this entire series is predicated on this tension that every single one of us in this room bump up against in our lives. And that tension is simply this: that in our lives and on this journey, it is so ridiculously easy for us to get off course. You see, whether you like to admit it or not, when you look back on your life, you see that to be true. And most of the time, those moments where we find ourselves off course, deviated from the target that we are shooting for, it does not happen all at once. It is not one big thud, one big decision, but it happens one small decision at a time. That each small decision off course takes us to dangerous destinations. It's the moments of our lives where the conversation started in a seemingly harmless way with a coworker in your office, and then it slowly turned flirtatious. And over time, it took you off course from the intimacy that you desired in your marriage. It's the small purchase after small purchase that you put on the piece of plastic, until over time, you looked back and there was so much debt accumulated that you now found yourself off course as it came to your financial future. That time and time again, in every facet of our lives and every facet of our marriage and our parenting and our finances and our relationships and even our vocations, we find ourselves making small decisions that take us off course. And after a while, we are forced to go face to face with this one question: what do we do to keep it from happening? That in our lives, we should be asking the question as we look back on our past and even into our present: what do we do to keep ourselves from going off course and drifting into places of our lives that we never wanted to be? As many of y'all know, Krista and I are at a stage of life in which we have two toddlers in our house. We have a 3- and a 4-year-old boy. And for those of you who have lived that stage of life with kids before, you know that there is this one saving grace in your life when you are at wit's end. It's a saving grace that as parents you hate to admit to, but it is that giant black box that sits at the front of your living room. And as you give in to that temptation for a little bit of respite every once in a while, be it the 30 minutes before nap time or the 30 minutes before bedtime or after you've just screamed for the 1,000th time of the day, what you know is that as you enter into that stage of life with your kids, they get very set on what they watch on TV. And in our household, we find ourselves in that place in which we just keep coming back to the same movies over and over and over again. Y'all have lived this before, right? Like, we watched Frozen so many times, Let It Go is what I wanted to do to that movie, right? Or in your house, it was a Disney flick from The Little Mermaid to The Lion King, or maybe you go all the way back to The Wizard of Oz. For us, right now, we find ourselves in that place with a movie called Sing. And have y'all ever seen the movie Sing? It's basically predicated on a bunch of animals who enter into a singing competition. And I have to hide it because my young son, he simply just goes, ee, 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 That's supposed to be a monkey. And that means that he wants to watch sing because there's a monkey in the movie that does singing. And every time we turn on the television and he points to the screen like, I want that one, I want that one. I have to hide my excitement a little bit. Any of y'all ever done this in front of your spouse? Like you groan and you moan just for show in front of your spouse, like we're watching this again. But we found ourselves in a place where like we can sing every single song and we know what's coming next and we can pick up in the middle and know exactly what scene we are coming to. And right now we're in a stage of life where around our house we absolutely love animated movies. And when we think back to the founding father of animated movies and where all of that goodness came from, we all know it originated with one man and one man only. And that man was Walt Disney. You got it, Walt Disney. And almost 90 years ago now, Walt Disney put idea to paper and began work on the very first feature-length film of an animated movie. And that very first feature-length film of an animated movie came in the form of a little-known movie called Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And they had just over $1 million to operate. And they pushed it to the very limit to make something come to life that had never happened in our world or on the movie screen before. And as they pushed it to the limit and came right down to the wire at their budget, there were serious questions about whether or not this was going to work and going to be a success, and whether or not they were going to be able to recoup the money that they had invested in this project. And what we know in the aftermath of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs is that it became one of the highest grossing movies of all time, only to be knocked off that platform by a little known movie by the name of Gone with the Wind. And in the aftermath of such high success, of putting to life this brand new thing in our world, Walt had a dream that many of us have had in our lives. That when we strike it rich, the very first thing we're going to do is not buy a car, not buy a house for ourselves, but we're going to take care of the people who took care of us. And so what did Walt decide to do? He decided to buy a home for his parents. And if you know the rest of the story, there's tragedy in Walt's story. Tragedy that he never was able to escape for the rest of his life. But Walt bought his parents a house. He moved them to him in California. And one day he got a call on the phone from his mother. She said, Walt, there's a funny smell happening in the house. I'm not exactly sure what's going on. We've just moved in and we don't know what this smell is. And so Walt gets the bright idea that he's going to send some of his maintenance guys from Disney over to check it out and to take care of it. And so he sends them over, and what they find is that the new furnace was just installed and it wasn't installed quite correctly. There were some adjustments that needed to be made, and they made those adjustments and everything was good to go. And the next morning the maid showed up, only to find that smell even worse. And as she rummaged through the house, she found both Walt's father and mother in their bedroom unresponsive. And she dragged them out, and Walt's mother passed away from what we know as carbon monoxide poisoning. Something that in our present world seems so unavoidable. Something that a solution could have been found for in the midst of tragedy. But 50 years later, the technology was developed so that that didn't have to happen anymore. It's something that we find that we plug into our walls, or for many of us comes attached to our smoke detectors in our household. If you've ever experienced what a carbon monoxide detector does, it gives an audible warning every time danger is imminent in your house. Every time the carbon monoxide level reaches a dangerous point for your operation in this life, there is an audible warning that happens. And this invention, this technology, was predicated on this truth that rings true in every facet of our lives. A truth that they wish they would have acknowledged and seen and been able to do something about nearly 50 years before this was invented in the life of Walt Disney's mother. And the truth is simply this, is that in our lives, the best protection is early detection. In our lives, the best protection is early detection. That as we encounter harmful things on this journey through life, We find ourselves avoiding the most amount of danger when that danger is detected early in the game. And what we're willing to acknowledge, especially with our health, is this, right? Prevention always trumps repair, right? We would always rather prevent the sickness from happening than trying to repair the sickness on the back end. It's the reason why we go and get yearly checkups. It's the reason why in our battle against disease and illness, when we catch it early, we have a better chance of survival. It's the reason why we embark on things like fitness plans and better eating habits, because we know if we can prevent heart disease from happening, it is always far better than having to repair it on the back end. And this truth is the very reason why when we drive on the highway, there was this invention that was created for your safety and my safety. And that invention was the rumble strip. This invention that was designed under this premise: it is always far better to know you're going off the road before you actually go off the road. That it is always far safer for our present and for our future, for our lives and the lives of the people we love, and even our possessions, for us to recognize when we are going off the road before we go off the road. And what's so incredible about the rumble strip, if you've encountered it in your life, is this: is that it is a warning system that comes with two distinct forms of warnings. The first is that every rumble strip is audible, right? That when you drive over the rumble strip, either on the shoulder of the road or in the middle of the road, it gives you an audible warning that you hear when you go over it. That's telling you you're going the wrong way. But it isn't just audible, it's also tactile, right? That when you go over it, like, there is no denying to your spouse when she looks at you and she says, "You're falling asleep." "No, I wasn't." No, because everybody in the car felt the car rumble when you drove over that. It rumbles your car so much that you can feel the fillings in your teeth shake inside of you. And sometimes if you're anything like me, you know that dad that just likes getting a rise out of everybody, when nobody's paying attention or the kids are sleeping in the back seat, you like to just veer over onto the rumble strips to get a rise out of everybody in the car, or just to scare them just a little bit. But there's this warning system that was created on our highways to keep us safe. And here's the reality. Here's where the dots connect in our lives and in our stories. Whether you like the cliche analogy or not, it doesn't mean it isn't true. Your life and my life is a highway. We find ourselves on a journey. There is a starting point, and there is a desired end point in our lives, something we are shooting for. And along this journey, along this highway in our lives, when we really look close enough, aren't our lives filled? You don't have to look any further than the last year to admit that this is true. Aren't our lives filled with hills and valleys and bends and curves and obstacles and roadblocks and potholes and drivers who are terrible drivers driving alongside of us, and even drivers who are driving the wrong way down a one-way street? In this journey of our lives, we are encountered with all of these moments, all of these things that are there in our journey that force us to do something to be safe, that force us to do something to live the best life possible. And in light of that, here's the good news, is that while this life is not easy, and while this life is rarely safe, we have a God who knows that. And because he knew that and loved you and I so ridiculously much, he decided to give us something in our lives to help us in the dangers of life. He desired to provide us with something every single day of our lives that kept us in our lane, that kept us on the road, that kept us from going over the cliff. He designed our lives to be lived with the bumper lanes, so that we lived down our own aisle and were able to strike the pins when it came to the end. And what we find is that as we move through this series, There are these audible and tactile warnings that God provides in our lives every single day that allow us to live the best life possible. And throughout this series, we're going to explore one of those such passages. In fact, over the course of the next 4 weeks, we are going to hang out in but just 8 verses. One passage in the book of Ephesians that gives us clear insight into the rumble strips that God wants to provide in our lives. Not because, you have to know this throughout this series, okay? This will be said almost every single week. Not because we have a God who wants to rob us of our joy and is a killjoy. No, because we have a God who wants us to live our best possible life, and he knows that it's done when we stay on the road. When we don't go crashing over the cliff in our marriages, in our finances, in our parenting, in our relationships. That our life is far better and far more enjoyable when we stay on the road. And so we're going to uncover that. But in order for us to fully understand what we're going to uncover and peel back the layers on over the course of the next 4 weeks, I felt it was only fitting for me to give you a little bit of historical context. And this is where, I've told you this before, this is where I geek out just a little bit and I don't get to live very often, but I love the history side of this. And so I wanted us to fully understand what's taking place in this passage that we're going to read and have us travel back about 2,000 years to really get a picture of what's going on. Like I said, what we're going to read is a book called, or rather a letter called Ephesians. And it was a letter wrote to the local church that presided in the city of Ephesus. Now, what you need to know about Ephesus is this. Ephesus was the crowning jewel of the Roman Empire. It was the most important port city in all of Rome. And what you know about ancient Roman times is this, is that a port city was foundational to the economy, to how goods moved and were received. And Ephesus was the epicenter of that in Roman culture. And because it was the crowning jewel, what they decided was that in this important city, we are going to build something to mark it as our crowning jewel. And what they decided to build was a temple, the Temple of Artemis. And the Temple of Artemis was so grand and so incredible that it is actually one of the 7 ancient wonders of the world. We all know when we think about ancient Roman culture, we've all heard the Parthenon, right? That the Parthenon was this incredible temple. The Temple of Artemis was twice as large as the Parthenon. That's how absolutely incredible it was. And they built this temple to honor one of the most prominent gods in Greek mythology at the time. And in the middle of this city of Ephesus, in the middle of the heights of Greek mythology, there was this local church following this guy named Jesus that was built on the shoulders of a guy named Paul that was absolutely exploding. That was changing that city from the inside out in the midst of Greek mythology. And it was being done because a guy named Paul, who wrote the letter that we are going to read, ventured into unknown and unexplored territory. You see, if you know nothing about the author of this letter, Paul was a guy who experienced all the twists and turns of life. And in his early adult years, Paul's sole mission of life was to stamp out the ember that was Christianity. To make sure that everyone who followed this guy named Jesus paid for that decision. And then one day, he encountered God. And everything in his life changed. And his mission changed in an instant. And I often look back on that story, the road to Damascus, and I often wonder, like, why did God need Paul? And then I look at the other disciples, and I'm like, got it. Like, God looked at the 11 disciples that were left that followed Jesus around for 3 years, and he knew there was an awful lot of fear going on there, and there were 11 dudes who were pretty much just going to hang around Jerusalem. And when Jesus left, he made it clear, I'm calling you to go into all of the world, and I don't know that these 11 dudes are going to get it done, so I need somebody else. And God saw the drive and the passion in Paul. And all that drive and all that passion, when Paul's story changed, got filtered, into not hunting down Christians, but into showing Christians who this guy named Jesus really was and the difference that he could make in their lives. And so Paul traveled all throughout the Roman Empire, planting local church after local church after local church, one of the greatest missionaries of all time. And because of what Paul was doing, the Jewish religious system hated him, and the Roman government hated him. And when you have two large entities that hate you, you can imagine that Paul fell into legal problem after legal problem. In fact, much of Paul's story that we read in his later life finds him behind bars. And Paul makes this decision as he finds himself behind bars that my mission is to go into all the world and to change the world and to build up the local church and to show this world that the hope of the church or the hope of the world is found in the local church. And just because I'm behind bars doesn't mean that my mission stops. And I've given blood, sweat, and tears when I was not behind bars, and I'll give it when I am behind bars. And so what did Paul do? He's like, I'm behind bars, let me fashion a shank and I'll dip it in some ink and I'll write it. And if they take that away from me, then I'll have somebody on the other side of the bars and I'll speak it and I'll have them write these letters and I'll send them to all of these churches to continue to propel them forward and to continue to grow them and build them. And that's what we find happening here in this letter that he writes to the local church in Ephesus. And this letter that he writes, this final piece of context that we need to understand that's so incredibly good. Like, if you've gone anywhere, come back, because this part of the context is so absolutely ridiculous about our God. This letter that we find him write to Ephesus is actually divided into two parts. What we find in these two parts is that the first part, about chapters 1 through 3, are the parts that describe the blessing. This is what we get. This is what has been given to us when we enter into a relationship with Jesus Christ. As the local church, when we fulfill Christ's mission for us, this is what he gives us. This is what he blesses us with. And then the second part, about chapters 4 through 6 of this short letter, is the behavior. That this is how we are supposed to act. And this is what we are supposed to do. And what's so absolutely incredible, you're like, Ben, what's incredible about that? There was nothing good about what you just said. The way in which this letter is structured defines God's new agreement with us as humanity. Because if you're anything like me, you've grown up in the church or you've looked at Christianity from the outside in, what you've been led to believe is this, is that behavior always comes first and the blessing always comes second. That I've got to behave in the right way, get myself together, live up to certain standards in order for God to bless me. And God, through this letter, is like, whoa, 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 whoa. Through my son Jesus, that all changed. The behavior no longer dictates the blessing. The blessing should dictate the behavior. The blessing has been given, and it should change flowing from that, the way in which you act. Isn't that so incredible? That our God in that moment made it clear, you don't have to live up to anything to get my blessing. But my blessing, when you receive it, should change you on the back end. And Paul makes that clear. And in the second half, in chapter 5, we see him write about this behavior and about these guardrails that God is setting up, these rumble strips that God is setting up in our lives to help us keep on the path towards the destination we desire. We pick up in chapter 5, starting in verse 14. If you haven't done so already, it's an incredible time for you to grab your weekly, crack that open. You can follow along with us as we move through the passages and even the fill in the blanks, or everything will come up on the screen for you as well. But in verse 14, Paul writes this. This is why it is said, awake, O sleeper, rise from the dead, and Christ will give you life. So be careful how you live. Don't live like fools, but like those who are wise. Make the most of every opportunity in these evil days. Don't act thoughtlessly, but understand what the Lord wants you to do. Don't be drunk with wine, because that will ruin your life. Instead, be filled with the Holy Spirit, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs among yourselves and making music to the Lord in your hearts. And give thanks for everything to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. And oh yeah, furthermore, Submit yourselves to one another out of reverence for Christ. See, as we move through this series over the course of the next 3 weeks, each week we're going to take a different rumble strip that God has laid out in our lives that helps keep us on path. But as I prepared for this series, what I recognized was this, is that in order for us to do that, we must start somewhere different. In order for us to acknowledge and use the rumble strips in our lives, we must start by acknowledging the truth that we actually need rumble strips. We must get to a place where we can get over the hurdle of, I don't need any help. I can do this on my own. I can watch out for myself. I can control my own life. Because if you're anything like me, it is easy for me to slip into that mentality. I can fix it myself. I can keep myself on the road on my own. I don't need any help. And yet, time and time again, what ends up happening in my life is I find myself in places I wasn't meant to be. Why? Because I was trying to do it on my own. Because I thought I had this. And then before long, guess what? I'm dozing off at the wheel. Before long, I've lost sight of what was going on ahead of me, and I was engaged on the phone that's in front of me. I was paying attention to something else, and I didn't see the danger that was crossing the road. You see, in order for us to be able to move forward and make this series as relevant and powerful as it can possibly be in our lives, in our futures, in our marriages, in our parenting, it requires us to first acknowledge that we need help, that we cannot do this, and that the rumble strips are actually beneficial for our lives going forward. And so we ask the question, why, Ben? Why do we need help? Why can't we do this on our own? And it really boils down to three things this morning that I want to help convince us of so that we can move forward in the right direction. The first reason we need help is this, is because in our lives, drifting happens. It is inevitable. On the highway of life, drifting constantly happens. It happens when you've stopped paying attention. It happens when you start to look at the wrong things. It happens when you're tired and you're exhausted. It happens when you take your hands off the wheel to type the next text or to change the radio station or to search for something in the glove compartment. In our lives, drifting happens consistently. And it's the reason why Paul starts this passage about rumble strips with this thing. It's like, that seems so out of place. It doesn't even make sense. Why would Paul start there? It's because of this truth. Awake, O sleeper. You have fallen asleep behind the wheel of your life. You have drifted off. Sometimes we need something that tells us you're going in the wrong direction. Because in the slow drift, we miss it. In the slow drift, we overlook it. And every time we start to let our guard down, what is inevitable is this. The drifting starts to take over. And unfortunately, we never drift in the right direction. We never drift in the right direction. Like, how many stories have you all heard about people who are like, yeah, I fell asleep at the wheel, and the last 30 miles, I just, like, drifted home. I fell asleep, and I just drifted right into my garage. It doesn't work that way. In our lives, we always drift into danger. We drift into trouble. And the scary part, and the reason that this series can be so powerful and so relevant in our lives is this, is that every single one of us in this room, every single one of us listening on a podcast, every single one of us watching online, every single one of us has an area of our lives in which we are presently drifting. No matter how painful it is to admit that, no matter how hard it is to see that, every single one of us have an area of our lives in which we are drifting, which we have stopped paying full attention. And at some point, We will pay the price for that unless we have rumble strips and we listen to the rumble strips that get us back on the right road. Drifting happens. Secondly, driving takes constant work. We need help because driving in this thing called life down the highway of life takes constant hard work. It is not easy. It is not always fun. That there will be moments along this journey in which we don't feel like working at it anymore, or we don't know how to work at it, and we need help. Because here's the truth. Here's another connect the dots moment. Think about your car and the moments in which your car loses its alignment, in which its alignment is off. What happens when your car's alignment is off? As soon as you take your hands off the wheel, what happens? Your car either pulls in one direction or it pulls in the other. And here's the crazy thing. Because of our sin nature, our alignment is off. Hello. Because of my sin nature and your sin nature, our alignment in this life as we travel down the highway is off. And we find ourselves being pulled in one direction or the other if we are not constantly working at it, if we are not constantly making sure we're adjusting the wheel at the right moments. And when there's a slight bend in the road, we're turning the steering wheel to go with those bends. And when there's something of danger ahead of us, or when there's a stoplight, that we stop at the appropriate times and we watch out for deer that are crossing the road as we travel through Ohio in the fall and the winter months, that we are constantly looking ahead and we are working on making sure we don't run into things, we don't drive off the cliff. And it's the very reason that one of the wisest dudes to ever walk on this earth, King Solomon, gave this advice for our life. He said this in Proverbs chapter 27, verse 12. A prudent person, a wise person, a person living the best possible life, what do? They foresee danger and take precautions. They work at it. They look ahead and adjust their course to make sure that they stay on the road. But the simpleton, sounds a whole lot better, some translations say, the fool goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. The best protection is early detection. It's to recognize that it's hard work and that we need help in the hard work, and that we need somebody in our lives that can help us see further down the road than what we can see on our own. That there will be temptations coming in our future, and we must work right now to eliminate those temptations. Why deal with a temptation later that you can eliminate now? But that takes courage. That takes hard work. That's what driving safely really looks like through this life. And so drifting happens, and driving is hard work. And lastly, and maybe most importantly, you can't correct what you don't detect. In your story and in my story, we are incapable of correcting what we do not detect. We can't make right what we don't know is there until it's too late and you've driven off the cliff. If you don't know it's there, you won't be able to correct it until the divorce papers are already on the table. If you don't know it's there, you won't be able to correct it before the creditors start calling your house. If you don't know it's there, you won't be able to correct it until your kids grow up and become adults and want nothing to do with you as their parents in their adult life. You see, in our lives, we have issues with correcting things because we don't first detect it. But here's what's so incredible. In our lives, we have help that is offered, that has a better perspective than we have, that sees further than what we see, that is able to detect things that we didn't even know were there. And that person wants the best for you. He knows you best and yet still loves you most. And that person wants to be invited on the journey of your life. Not to rob you of fun, but to allow you to live the best possible life. to keep your marriage safe and intimate, to keep your relationships with your kids healthy and growing, to keep your finances healthy and generous. That's what God desires for us. And he wants to be this guide. He wants to lay down the rumble strips. But in order for us to move forward and to accept the help and to acknowledge the rumble strips in our life, it boils down to two questions. Two questions that every single one of us in this room and online must answer that determines where we go from here. The first question is this: who do you want to be your guide? Who do you want to be your guide through this highway called life? Because every single one of us who are adults can look back on our past and see this reality. There are no shortage of options. That there will always be people and companies and products and things clamoring to be the guide of your life, trying to tell you that they know what's best for your present and your future. But guess what? Every single one of those people and those things that is clamoring to be the guide for your life is just as broken and messed up as you are. Just as short-sighted and has just as much tendency to drift as you do. Do we really want those things to be our guide? Do we really want to follow their lead? Or do we want something better? Do we want someone better? Who is not biased, who is not broken, who does not have a sin nature, and who always wants what's best for you. Not what's best for him or her, but what's best for you. We have that option. Second question is actually predicated on a lie that I told you earlier. You see, I told you that life is a highway. It's the title of this message. But the truth is, life is actually two highways. Jesus makes it clear in Matthew chapter 7. He says, you can enter God's kingdom only through the narrow gate. The highway to hell is broad, and its gate is wide for the many who choose that way. But the gateway to life is very narrow, and the road is difficult, and only a few ever find it. The second question is, which highway do you want to take? There are two options that have been offered to every single one of us. One is easy, and it's the one that seemingly everybody else is taking. One is difficult, and it's one that few are taking. But the end point to each of these highways end in vastly different places. Which highway do you want to take? You see, we can't move forward individually or collectively without answering those questions. And our answers to those two questions determine our present and our futures. Our answers to those two questions determine whether or not we actually want the rumble strips in our lives that lead to a better life and a better eternity. It's been offered. But are you willing to admit that you need help? Are you willing to answer the question, who do I want my guide to be? And are you willing to maybe answer the most difficult question of all? Which highway do I want to take? Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for being a God who always wants what's best for us. Even when it hurts and we don't understand it, even when it's hard and we feel like turning back, God, you are a perfect God who sees our imperfections, and because of that, offers us a better way. Offers us rumble strips, warning signs, both audible and tactile in our lives every single day. Help keep us on the path to our desired destination, the destination we were created to arrive at. God, this morning, you're a God who also loves us so much that you don't force us to adhere to the rumble strips. They're not retaining walls. You're a God who loves us so much that you don't force us to choose your highway. We get to make that choice on our own. God, this morning, as we move forward, not just in this series, but in our lives, may we be people who are courageous enough, no matter what the cost may be, no matter how difficult the road ahead may be, to make the choice. While there may be 1,000 different options of things and people who want to guide us, we want a better guide than that. And while there may be 2 highways, one that seems easy and everybody's taking, and one that's difficult and nobody else seems to be taking, God, we want to choose the highway that leads to the best place at the end. And we have the courage to do that. It's in your name that I pray. Amen. This morning, I want to finish a little bit differently. I want to take us back to what Russell shared with you guys during announcements. See, oftentimes in my own life, in my own story, as I look at big events, things coming down the pike, and I think, man, it's a month off. I've got plenty of time to do that. You know what that typically leads to in my life? I never end up doing it. And what I want us to hear this morning, for those of you sitting in this room who are Christ followers, is that we have a mission that is too good for us to waste any more time. And that there are people in your life right here, right now, who have journeyed through the last 12 months down a highway that feels like there is no light at the end of the tunnel, like there is no hope, unsure of why this road has to be traveled. And we believe that this Easter is the opportunity to be a turning point in so many people's stories. But the only way they get to experience that is if you have the courage to invite them. Is if we collectively step out of our comfort zones and invite our coworkers, our friends, our family members who we have never invited before, or who maybe we've been turned down 12 times before, that we're going after it again and we're going to invite again. Because we're laying all of our chips on the table collectively as a church, as an organization, that this Easter has the potential to change stories. It's the reason we're stepping out of our comfort zone and we're doing a Saturday night service and we're putting volunteers through the ringer for that. Because we want to give every opportunity to make this place an invitable place and a comfortable place in the midst of everything that's going on to come here and have your world absolutely rocked by a God who loves you no matter what. That's what we get to be a part of this Easter. But as much as I love you guys, I don't want to be a part of it with just you. I want to be a part of it with your friends, and your family, and your coworkers. And I want to share that journey with them, and I want their story to be changed on this one weekend. And so I'm asking you to link arms with me. I'm asking you to step outside of your comfort zone with me and to take those invites and to invite people right here, right now, to be a part of Easter at Core. Lastly, next week, I know today was the introduction, today was the convincing for the series, but next week we get a whole lot more practical. And we start this journey on what the rumble strips on the middle of the highway of our lives, the internal rumble strips are that God has given us, and how we begin to put those into practice in our lives. It's going to be so ridiculously good. It is a weekend that you do not want to miss. And so we want to make sure that you are back here next week as we continue with part 2 of our series, Rumble Strips. Thanks so much for being here this morning. Have a great rest of your Sunday. We hope to see you soon.